What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the King's Court Podcast, presented to you by RateCrushers.com. I want to thank everyone that's been joining us on this show for the past week. It's been a bit crazy, right? We've had so many guests from Rafael Barlow to Bryant West, Brandon Nunes, and you know what? I was like, I haven't had a new member on this show just yet. And I said, let me reach out. Let me talk to someone that I know I've talked to for a little while, but I've actually never had him on the show, making his King's Court debut, as you see right there, Mr. Matt George. Matt, thank you for finally coming on the show, man. I'm so excited to have you on. How you doing?
Good, man. It's a pleasure to be on. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad you had Rafael Barlow on. That's my boy, man. He's incredible, the work that he does. So you got an absolute great one. I should be his opening act, not the other way around, but I appreciate you.
Hey, man, you know, you have been doing so much good work for Locked On Kings, and I feel like being that this is a Kings podcast, let this man open for you. Like, I get that he is a great guest, and shout out to Rafael for coming on the show the many times that he has. But you know what, Matt, I've been following your work here for a minute. You and I were cohorts over there at Cowbell Kingdom, then to see you get on Locked On Kings and now being a part of ABC. I mean, from Sacramento side, I get to talk to many people, and you are a name that consistently comes up as, man, when are we going to have Matt on the show? So finally having you here, I want to just give you some flowers a little bit, man. Say congratulations to you, brother.
Bro, I appreciate the love. Thank you so much, man. It's been a grind, but it's been a fun one. You're doing everything right yourself. And it's really, truly a pleasure to be able to come on your show, man. And I remember where I came from. Locked On gave me the opportunity. ABC10 gave me the opportunity. KHDK gave me the opportunity. And you just make the most of it. And you're making the most of everything that you do, man. So to be invited on shows like this, it's an absolute instant yes for me. So thanks for having me. And we'll definitely be doing it again, I'm sure.
For sure. Matt, like I said, Matt George, if you guys haven't followed him already, at Matt George, SAC on Twitter, and follow his shows, The Locked On Podcast. So Matt, I'm having you on here for a reason, brother. I've been watching your show a little bit here and there. You've been having your draft analysis going on as of I here on our shows, and it seems you and I are a little bit different in the mindset of who should be selected at number four for the Sacramento Kings. Me, since it was announced the Kings landed number four, I was all in on Jaden Ivey. I said it's going to be clear the closer and closer that we get to draft night that Jaden Ivey was going to be the clear best player available there. But I keep hearing you on your show, Keegan Murray. What has you so infatuated with this young prospect?
Yeah, you're 100% right, and you're definitely not alone in the love for Jaden Ivey. And I'll start everything by saying if draft night happens and the Sacramento Kings leave draft night with Jaden Ivey as their fourth overall pick, there's not going to be any frustration or disappointment on this end. As high as I am on Keegan Murray, I think Jaden Ivey's going to be a really, really good basketball player, and I think there would be a lot of fun that he would bring. Certainly a lot of flash and flair, a lot of reason to watch the Sacramento Kings with him, De'Aaron Fox, next to each other. But for Keegan Murray, with me, it comes down to a couple things. The fit versus best player available, and really I put an asterisk with that. It's more for me fit versus highest ceiling, because if it's a best player available conversation, I do think actually – Keegan Murray has a slight edge as the best player available based off of the numbers that he put up at Iowa last year, the improvement year over year that he's had at Iowa. Those numbers speak for themselves. And then I believe he's going to be able to come into Sacramento and have more of a day one impact than Jaden Ivey would. And that is another reason why I'm so high on Keegan Murray is I went into this offseason, I think we all went into the draft lottery night, right, with the expectation the Kings were going to end up with the seventh pick. And the idea for me with pick number seven was, okay, if you're the Sacramento Kings, you either trade number seven to go out and get a guy that this team needs. And really, to me, the biggest glaring hole for this team right now is that, like, starting four spot, right, or that other wing position, someone to start alongside DeMontis Sabonis who fits with him and fits with De'Aaron Fox, someone who spaces the floor, who kind of stays out of their way, but someone who can also help with defense, someone who can also help with rebounding, that are two other primary weaknesses of the Sacramento Kings. Based off of what I understand of Keegan Murray, that's what he does. He checks those boxes. Those are the things that Keegan Murray delivers on. So that's why I'm so high on his ability to come into Sacramento and fit with this team from day one. I don't expect him to necessarily become a superstar. Quite honestly, I'm perfectly okay with Keegan Murray being, if the best is a solid NBA starter, if that's what he is for his career, I'm perfectly happy with that as long as he's a solid NBA starter on a playoff team here in Sacramento and a team that could potentially be competing for championships. Although I completely understand the argument of people saying, you moved up to four, you're a bad team, you absolutely need to swing for the fences for a star. I think Keegan Murray can be a day one impact player that could be really, really good for the Kings. And I don't think his ceiling is as is that much lower than Jaden Ivey's.
Yeah, I think your asterisk is perfect for it, right? It's not really best player available versus best fit. It's more of biggest upside versus best fit. I've never really thought of it that way because in my mind, best player available is talent that can impact as well as the upside to become something more. But in most Kings fans' eyes, I think you're hitting it right on the head, man, where they just like this, he could be a superstar. That's why you draft for him. And I guess, like you said, swinging for the fences could be the best thing there. I mean, I keep looking at Keegan Murray, though, Matt, and my biggest, I guess, issue that I have for his play style is I don't know if it completely translates at the next level, right? I don't know if it'll completely make that move where he, as a skinny-framed forward, is going to be asked to play power forward right off the get, any of those forward spots, really, for the Kings. And defensively, while he was strong, I don't know if he's going to really be able to hold his base against those players. And then on the opposite end, where are we going to see him do a majority of those post moves that he was getting a large portion of his offense from? Is he going to be able to be that player that is demanding the basketball down on the post and doing those quick moves? And does his length carry over, right? Because he does look long for his size, and he was able to finish against college opponents at the rim. I think a large part of that due to his length and his ability to move at that quickness, does that make its way to the next level? And then obviously with the three-point shooting, his three-point shooting is amazing. Sorry for all the loud noises. My dogs decided it was time to play over here, and they really wanted to join in on this conversation. But the three-point shooting for me, the only concern I have for his three-point shooting, as I do think it is an amazing shot. It looks pretty. Just if you wanted to watch film on a good jump shot, watch Keegan Murray's jumper. But is he going to be able to set the screens that then creates enough space for him to get that shot off? I think height-wise, he doesn't need too much room, but how good of a screener is Murray really? And for those are my big issues. Now, if he can start improving in terms of being an on-ball, just off-the-ball scorer and off-the-ball shooter, I think it makes his upside much higher than what it is. But for me, Matt, it's still maybe a max ceiling of a Tobias Harris.
Vincent, I think the questions that you're asking and the concern that you have, I think they're shared by most draft analysts out there. I think they're very good points and questions that are tough to answer and tough to really get an idea of until they get a spot in the NBA. That's why the NBA draft is such a crapshoot in so many ways. I mean, the best way that I can address it is, and again, this is based off the understanding of someone who follows the Sacramento Kings year-round, only pays attention to college basketball, really, around the March Madness tournament, and then really starts doing deep dives this time of the year. Yeah. So everything that I say is taken with the understanding that I have not watched Keegan Murray play every single day. I have not watched Keegan Murray and his journey through Iowa to this spot, although from what I understand about his story, it's pretty significant. So on Locked On Kings, what I've done is bring in people who have. I brought in an Iowa beat writer who spent a long time covering Keegan Murray over the last couple of years. I brought in his head coach, Fran McCaffrey, at Iowa. Now, of course, the head coach is going to talk about their guy and make their guy sound like the greatest player on earth. So everything that is said there, you kind of have to keep that in mind. But from what I understand about Keegan Murray is he has a tremendously high basketball IQ. That's always a benefit to bring into the NBA with you. That's something that Davion Mitchell brought into the NBA with him when we saw how he developed as the season went on. There were question marks about Davion Mitchell's offensive game. By the end of the year, he was arguably the best offensive player on the Kings with both Fox and Sabonis out. I'm not making a direct comparison there. That's just to say that I think Keegan Murray can both take the time that he needs to develop the areas of his game that need to translate if he's going to be successful in the NBA, while still being an immediate impact player because of his skill set and his fit with the Sacramento Kings roster. The shooting immediately, you talk about him setting screens, right? Is he going to create enough space on screens, pick and pops, in order to get that shot off? A very valid concern, especially with him having one of the more slower jump shots that you'll see in this draft class. However, while he can develop that stuff over time, I look at the amount of tension that De'Aaron Fox draws attacking the basket. I look at the amount of tension that Domantas Sabonis is going to have either in the low post or in the high post at the elbow. He's going to get his fair share of open looks just by properly spacing the floor. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be more than 10 good looks a game or anything like that. But I think Keegan Murray, in the natural flow of the offense, he's one of those guys that you can just pick up and plug him into a starting lineup on opening night, and I truly believe he can have an impact. Same thing goes on the defensive end of the floor. The questions about his ability to stay or to bang down low with some of the bigger fours in the league, I think they're valid comparisons, or rather valid concerns. Can he play the five if the Kings go small? I don't think so. I don't necessarily know that. But I do know that in the modern positionless basketball, that four spot is basically more of a wing spot than it is a big man spot. It's not like the power forwards of old. You have to be able to be versatile. You have to be able to be a little bit more quick, a little bit more athletic. And from what I've seen from Keegan Murray, he does have at least some of that lateral quickness to stay in front of some of the bigger wings, and I don't think he's going to be a pushover by any means as well. Finally, you talk about his post-up moves, right? That post-scoring ability. And this is where I look a lot at the comparisons of Harrison Barnes, right? And I, for one, would be completely thrilled if the Sacramento Kings had two Harrison Barnes on their roster. I think having two Harrison Barnes on your team means you're a pretty good team. I understand people who are hesitant to use a four pick if their ceiling is Harrison Barnes, and I think Keegan Murray's ceiling can be higher than what Harrison Barnes is. But HB does a really good job recognizing when he does have mismatches, and he turns his game into a post game. HB did a lot of his scoring over the last 2 years in Sacramento in the post. In fact, when the Kings needed buckets sometimes last season, it was HB in the post that they went to, and a lot of times he capitalized on that. So while I understand it's a concern of, hey, how will this part of Murray's game translate to the NBA, because he was 21 years old, bigger than most of the college guys that he was playing against, and he was able to bully them. The way I look at it is that he recognized the strength that he had in his game, and he exploited it at the college level. Even though he wasn't necessarily just only playing freshmen and guys that were younger than him, he was playing playing seniors as well. So if he can get that part of his game, if he can recognize, understand how to read a defense, and if that's the best way that he can exploit a mismatch and score on his own, I'm all for it. But I think his floor spacing, that shooting ability offensively, is going to be his biggest asset. And then defensively, he's good enough. He's not a culture changer defensively, but he's good enough to rely on if you're going to develop a good team defense, which I think we're all hopeful that Mike Brown can incorporate here in Sacramento.
For sure. Matt George of the Locked On Kings podcast and ABC 10 joins the Kings Score here, presented by RateCrushers.com. We're going to take a quick 15-second break here for this commercial, and we'll be back on the other side. Give it 1 second here. And we're back. Matt George still here on the Kings Court talking a lot about Keegan Murray and, of course, the Sacramento Kings having that number four pick. Matt, I think my big question now for Murray, let's say the Kings are so infatuated with him because of the things that you're saying, right? He does fit right away. He fits an extremely big need, I think, for the Kings that we saw at the end of the season, which was shooting, especially after giving away Buddy Hield, arguably the Kings' best shooter since Peja, and their number one three-point shooter in franchise history, actually. So you're looking at him, you're infatuated with him, but then you have two options in mind, and there's been reports going on about the Kings potentially looking to move up for the number two pick with OKC, or the idea of moving down. In your mind, what do you think carries the biggest upside? Let's say if the Kings can snag a Keegan Murray at six, and you have that Indiana Pacers deal, which continues to be the rumor of Malcolm Brogdon. So let's say it's Brogdon and the six pick, but you know you're going to get Murray at six for that number four, or would you do the opposite end of that trade where you say you give up number four and maybe 2023, 2024 pick, and you get OKC's number two, and you go after a Chet, Jabari, or Paolo? Which one do you fall more in love with?
Well, the higher upside is always going to be moving up in the draft. And as much as I love Keegan Murray, if any of the top three were to fall to Sacramento at four, even with Keegan Murray on the board, I'd think about it, but I'm more than likely I'm taking those top three, especially if one of them is Chet Holmgren. Like, I think Chet, in very many ways, and I'm in love with Jabari Smith Jr. as well, and I have massive respect for Paulo Banchero's game, but Chet is reportedly or rumored the guy that the Kings are really interested in moving up for, because he kind of is a best of both worlds player. He does a lot of the things the Kings need. He theoretically fits, even though there's questions about Sabonis playing at the four and Chet playing at the five. Of course, there's questions about his weight and concerns with that, but he spaces the floor. He protects the rim. He helps with rebounding. He does so many things that the Sacramento Kings need, and he has the potential to be the best player in this draft class. So higher upside is definitely that. But if the Sacramento Kings, if I'm running the Sacramento Kings and I want to get Keegan Murray, and Keegan Murray to me is not a consolation prize, and I can do it while also picking up an asset like you brought up, like a Malcolm Brogdon. I talked to the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast trying to find out what would need to happen on draft night. Like, would Paulo or Chet or Jabari need to fall to four for the Kings to swap picks with Detroit, get like a Jeremy Grant out of them, and then you take a Keegan Murray, who might still be on the board, or a Shaedon Sharpe, even if that's the route you want to go. There are options for the Kings there. What I like is that Monty McNair does have so many options. They're fun for us to discuss here in a podcast format. The reality is, though, Vincent, we don't have to be right. We can have our opinions. We don't have to be right.
No.
Monty McNair has to be right. So whatever he does, whether it's trading this pick, trading up, trading down, trading out, drafting a player, I believe the Kings are walking away on draft night with a solid player at the very least. But for Monty, for his job purposes, for this playoff mandate, and for the success of the Sacramento Kings, which is a word that hasn't really been used to describe this organization for a long time, they absolutely have to get this pick right. They have to get the right guy or right collections of guys. They have to maximize this value, because for the third time in the last handful of draft lotteries, the Kings have gotten a gift. They moved up to five. They got De'Aaron Fox. They moved up to two. We don't need to talk about what happened. Now they're up to four. Like, third time's a charm here. I know none of those other selections, none of those other picks were Monty McNair's time here in Sacramento, but that doesn't matter. The Kings' history is the Kings' history. He has to get this move right, and he has a lot of options to potentially do that.
Don't you think that it would be in the Kings' best interest to extend McNair before the draft night?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's to me, I'm okay with Monty McNair being extended right now. Okay with Monty McNair being extended the second that Mike Brown signs his new contract. In reality, Mike Brown and Monty McNair, in my opinion, should be on the same length of contract. But I will say, I'm not panicking. I'm not overly concerned with McNair not being under contract. He is under contract, not having an extension yet, because look, he has to deliver. His first 2 years here in Sacramento, not all his fault. I feel like he's finally building his team, whereas he was still kind of dealing with what he inherited from Vlade Divac. But his first 2 years have not been good. The Kings have underperformed, especially last year. That team last year was absolutely dreadful when they were supposed to be good. And many say that Monty McNair wasted at least one offseason with his decision not to fire Luke Walton, with his decision not to change his roster, not to move on from a guy like a Buddy Hield sooner. So, he has to deliver. So, I don't blame the Sacramento Kings organization for saying, look, you don't just get this contract just because you hired a new coach. I would like to see him extended. Don't get me wrong. I would like to see all this behind us so we don't have to worry about it at all. But again, it goes back down to simply the Sacramento Kings, and specifically Monty McNair. They have to deliver, and they have to get this move right.
Yeah, that's why when you bring up Chet, and I've been talking about it on these last few shows here, it's Chet does show such promising upside. Like, I think, like you said, Chet could be that number one guy in this draft. I'm a big Banchero guy. I think Banchero is the best player in this draft right now. But I think best fit wise, I look at Jabari Smith. That's the only person in my mind that if you're moving up to two, because I think 2023's draft class is going to be extremely better than the one that we're seeing right now. So if you want to hold on to that one, the only way I'm moving up to number two is if I'm either taking Paolo or Jabari. I think Chet is still too much of a project. I was talking with Barlow the other day, like I said on the show. He said that wherever Chet needs to go to, there's going to be a target on his back. And he thinks initially, early in his career, he's going to struggle, and it's best for him to go to a patient franchise. And for me, I think that's OKC. I think OKC makes a lot of sense there, or even Orlando. And I think it's still being underlooked or undervalued in the fact that Suggs and Chet were not only best friends growing up, they won three high school championships together. When Chet was making the announcement to go to Gonzaga, Jalen flew to his home to be there for that announcement day. I feel like that camaraderie and that friendship, that builds culture, and Orlando is currently in that mindset of a shift where there's still so many moving pieces. They finally got a lot of talent on that team, but now it's time to figure out what's here to build our house with and what can we go get for some of these other players. So I still think a project player is not what's best for the Kings, in my opinion, with Chet. But what are your thoughts on that?
No, I agree completely. If Chet is too much of a project, then I think the Sacramento Kings should avoid him. That's why I think the Sacramento Kings should have zero interest in Shaedon Sharpe. This is just my opinion. Yeah. Do the Sacramento Kings seem like the team, based off of their history of struggling to develop players, and with a theoretical playoff mandate with basically 2 years to win or you lose Domantas Sabonis to free agency, does that seem like the right team to take a flyer on Shaedon Sharpe? Not to me. Maybe you can put Chet Holmgren in the same, the same category, although I think that's underselling Chet a little bit. I understand concerns about Chet being more of a project. He certainly is young. He certainly has to put on weight and has to develop at the NBA level. It's always scary to take a big man that high in any draft because typically we see more guards flourish around that range than bigs do, although the top three in this draft are all power forwards or centers, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it is.
I'm okay with the Sacramento Kings taking Chet. I don't think he's going to be as big of a project as maybe you or Raphael think, but also maybe that's because I see in the same way I see Keegan Murray fitting right away. I see Chet being able to deliver his maximum skill sets, areas of his game that make the most waves, that draw the most attention. Those are areas that the Sacramento Kings could use. So I'm not expecting Chet to play differently in Sacramento. I expect him to come to Sacramento and do what he does best, and that helps the team, very similar to how I feel about Keegan Murray. I will say, too, about Paolo Banchero, out of the top three, he's the one out of the three that I'm probably least excited about, and that's not uncommon. And I spoke with, I think it was Aaron Torres from Fox Sports Radio and the Aaron Torres podcast, and he covers a lot of college basketball. He has Paolo Banchero as his number one guy, too. And he says he thinks that Paolo's been so solid and so consistently good that people have almost gotten bored of it, like that they just kind of like expect it now. So that's why the flair of Jabari Smith Jr. and Jaden Ivey, or the what if 7-foot natural height of Chet Holmgren, that's attracted people a little bit more. Any one of those top three falls to the Kings at four. Even if I love Keegan Murray, I'm taking any one of those top three: Chet, Jabari, Paolo, and I have a big smile on my face on draft night.
Yeah, I think no matter what, the Kings organization and Kings fans, whether it's Murray, Ivey, Paolo, any of those guys, I think the bigger the smile obviously will be the player, but I think you're leaving out of draft night going, I understand that pick. Like, no one should be disappointed with anyone they decide to pick in the top four, whether it's Murray, Ivy. Honestly, even if it's Sharp, and I'm not a Sharp guy, the whole backstory on Sharp still makes me feel a little iffy. The fact that we haven't heard of him being scheduled for any workouts yet. That one pro day that he did looked way too slow, and I don't know how it was taken that everyone loved it. And I don't know. He scares me out of everyone in the top five in this draft. Looking forward, looking at this team, let's say they go ahead and draft a Murray, Sharp, anything like that. Who in your mind is a target for you in free agency that comes straight to your mind there? Because on the last show, Brendan and I looked at Victor Oladipo, we looked at TJ Warren, Gary Harris, all of those guys, and the Kings don't really have too much money to be working with this offseason, so it seems as if you're only picking one. But is there any free agents on your mind that you see that the Kings should be having circled on their wish list?
Well, if the Kings are going to make a big splash in free agency, it's going to be through sign-and-trade situations. I know Zach LaVine's name has suddenly been brought up as someone who's available in sign-and-trade, but at that point, he's signing a max with Chicago, like the 5-year, 200-plus million, and then you're trading for that. The Kings do have a bunch of expiring contracts. which they can use in any kind of move, plus maybe like a Rashawn Holmes or maybe even a Harrison Barnes if they want to acquire a big money player that can make a significant impact. I'm not ruling that out. I just don't think that's very likely. Victor Oladipo is an interesting name. I kind of like the idea of it. I don't think he would be naturally or he I don't think he would be that expensive necessarily. But I also know what I'm getting, and damaged goods sounds like an insult, but in reality, it's Victor Oladipo is not what he used to be. So could he be the starting two in Sacramento and you'd be a good team? Probably. He had some good moments for the Miami Heat in the playoffs. So I think I'm interested in that. A name that I like a lot, and I'm interested in kind of reuniting the Kentucky backcourt. I'm a big fan of Malik Monk. I have been a big fan of Malik Monk for a while. So I don't think Malik Monk is going to cost that much. He had a pretty solid season in L.A. He disappeared at times, also was their best shooter for a lot of the season. Kings need shooting. I don't know if Malik Monk comes here and is their starting two guard. You are more than likely re-signing Dante DiVincenzo. I don't know if he's going to get the mid-level exception or anything better than that, but I don't think he's going to command too much money, more than likely bringing him back. You still have Terrence Davis, who I'm anxious to see what he does with this roster. Like the Kings just need to improve their roster overall and find out which players on this roster are actually going to be able to hang and which ones you need to get rid of in order to bring in players that are going to hang. Like, I'm also a big fan of Damian Jones. I think the Kings should do what they can to bring Damian Jones back. I don't know how much money he's going to cost on the open market. I do know he's going to have some interest with a lot of teams outside of Sacramento, maybe even the Golden State Warriors, who could maximize him and do a lot with him, I think, next season. So I don't expect the Kings to make a big splash in free agency unless it's through a sign and trade. More than likely, it's going to be securing what they want to secure and then maybe sprinkling a little on top. That's where like a Malik Monk comes into play for me.
Yeah, Monk is an interesting name. I like Malik Monk. I agree with you. I think the best player available for the Kings is going to come in a sign and trade deal or just a trade across the board. Are you comfortable with the Kings deciding that this is the offseason where they start moving some of their picks to get one of those big players?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. I was ready for the Kings to move picks last offseason. I was also significantly higher on last year's team than I should have been and looked like an idiot for that. And I think many of us did. That team was dreadful and they should not have been as bad as they were. But like I said, with the acquiring Sabonis' contract, you have a two-year window. And I understand the allure of the 2023 draft class, but we should all be hoping that the Sacramento Kings aren't giving a damn about the 2023 draft class. We should be hoping that the Sacramento Kings don't have a lottery pick next year and are worrying about how they're going to build upon a low playoff seed next offseason. We're hoping that's what the Kings are worrying about at this time next year. So I'm 100% okay with Monty McNair moving draft picks. I'm not okay with McNair moving draft picks if it's in a desperate attempt for him to save his job, which I don't believe is the case whatsoever. From people that I've talked to, from my understanding of Monty McNair, my understanding of the situation, even though Monty's not extended, he's not in incredibly hot water, and he doesn't have so much pressure put upon his shoulders right now that he needs to make a monumental move to save his job. So I'm not really concerned about that at all. So I believe every move that Monty makes through the draft, through free agency, through trades, he's making that move with the expectation that he's going to have the repercussions. He's going to deal with the repercussions 2, 3, 4 years down the road. So if I'm McNair and I can use a 2024 first, a 2025, 2026 first, a couple of them. If I can use that to improve my team right now and try and get this team into the playoffs right away and maximize the core that you have right now and also win the games necessary to re-sign or probably convince DeMontis Sabonis that he's going to want to stay here when he tests free agency in 2 years, that is the most important thing to me. As at some point, as bright as the future is and as exciting as draft picks are because they have so much value because there's so much unknown attached to them, at some point you actually have to deliver in something feasible that's actually good. And the Kings, I'm okay with them sacrificing future what ifs in order to start securing some wins.
Yeah. I don't want McNair to become the scapegoat if the Kings struggle early. And that's the biggest thing that I think I guess it's the most uneasy thing I feel about the Kings is that if you don't extend Monty heading into draft night and it's because you want to see how the Kings perform with this new roster that you're letting him build, I just don't want them to think that automatically because of these moves that they made, they finally got some good pieces. Because I do think the Kings have the assets, especially with these picks, to go get a good player. And I've brought up the name SGA quite a few times on here. Donovan Mitchell's name is going to start coming up here in just a quick minute. Zach LaVine. I think there's big names to be had. And let's say they go get it. I don't want McNair being like, oh, you traded away all of our assets and the team doesn't even look like they're improving. They're still only winning 34 games. Then they let him go because they didn't want to extend him. I think it takes time. You have to let, you know, a team build and grow. So that's my biggest fear for the Kings is they're going to let a good GM in Monty. And I think he's proven to be a good GM for what he's done. I mean, obviously that 1 year that you talked about earlier about, are you playing it a little safe? It felt like he was, and then he decided no more, go get Sabonis, trade away Tyrese Halliburton, and let's see what he can build with.
Yeah, we'll have to wait to see what roster Monty brings into training camp before we can really start to dissect it and look at it under a microscope. All indications that I've got is that Monty is okay, even if his contract situation, if he is going into a kind of a lame duck year. To me, the attention at the start of next season falls completely on De'Aaron Fox. Yep. Even if the Kings go out and do get another big name, De'Aaron Fox, unfortunately, has the reputation of getting off to slow starts. The Sacramento Kings simply cannot afford that anymore. I think De'Aaron has had more than his fair share of legitimate excuses, especially going into last year. The Sacramento Kings, the biggest moves that they made were bringing in other guards. They hadn't gotten him any help. They hadn't gotten rid of guys who didn't want to be here. And I don't blame De'Aaron going into that last season going, what the hell is going on? You guys are just wasting my time here. Now you've got your guy in Domantas Sabonis, which, by the way, I can't remember who tweeted this out earlier today, but when Fox and Sabonis were on the floor together for that limited amount of time at the end of the season, they had the third best offensive rating in the league. So yeah, a full season of the two of them together, there's excitement there for a reason. I think De'Aaron has more than enough to be excited about with Sabonis as his front court partner. But I will say this, he has no excuses anymore. And if De'Aaron thought that people were being critical of him maybe last season and giving the keys to Tyrese when it should have still been his team, it's only going to get worse if the Kings start next season and De'Aaron gets off to another slow start and they are 3, 4, 5 games under 500 before Christmas.
Like, yeah.
It's got to start delivering right away if the Kings want any chance.
Yeah, there's definitely no more excuses. We even talked about it, man. It's a make or break year for Fox in terms of him being a Batman, I guess people would say, right? To be a real leader of a team. We're finding out this year because it's true. Sabonis is the best player De'Aaron Fox has got to play with since becoming an NBA player. And this is now his team. They've literally given him the keys to the franchise with all the moves that they've made and the moves that they're going to make. Matt, thank you so much for joining the show, man. Before I let you go, I'm going to start reading off some of this chat here that we got. They say, my guys, I like Keegan. I want Keegan. Safest way to trade back with the Pistons. I think trading back with the Pacers might be too risky. What are your thoughts on that?
There is definitely a risk factor. There's a risk factor in anything that you do here this season or this offseason. There is definitely a risk if you move back, especially if, like, we look back at this draft 3-4 years from now and Jaden Ivey is there for the Kings at 4 and they decide to maybe get cute and Jaden Ivey turns into a damn good player. And you can add into the list of, there's a guy the Kings should have taken, was there for them, and they passed on him. So there is definitely a risk factor to it. I think we can come up with those risks and come up with that fear for any move that the Sacramento Kings make. But believe me, if the Kings can move back, land Keegan Murray, and a proven NBA asset on top of that on draft night, to me, that's a very successful night.
What's a better idea for you? The Kings trading back to get Malcolm Brogdon or the Kings trading back with the Pacers to get Miles Turner and trying that Sabonis-Turner combo again?
Oh, it's Malcolm Brogdon. It's Malcolm Brogdon completely. And I actually am a big fan of Miles Turner. But if it didn't work in Indiana, why would you try and replicate it in Sacramento It just, that doesn't make sense to me. Malcolm Brogdon, I understand the injury concerns with Malcolm Brogdon completely, but he's also a dog. He's a hard worker. He plays hard, fights hard defensively, adds an impact that the Sacramento Kings team needs more of. I think he would be a great player for Mike Brown's system, and he's someone that offensively isn't afraid to carry the load too. If you look at his offensive stats for Indiana, when they needed him to score, he stepped up and scored. There are questions about how he would fit with De'Aaron Fox. He likes to be a primary ball handler. Of course, that's going to be Fox's main job here. And Domantas Sabonis needs to have the ball in his hands a lot, especially as a pass-first big man. So there are definitely questions with fit, for sure. If your answer to that is you have to bring Malcolm Brogdon off the bench, you got a damn good sixth man, maybe even a seventh man if you're also bringing Davion Mitchell off the bench. So I'm a big fan of Malcolm Brogdon.
Matt, thank you so much, like I said, for joining the show, brother, and making your Kings Court debut. It's been such an interesting conversation, and looking at the idea that Keegan Murray could still be the guy, or what's it looking like at the top, and our thoughts on all of those guys. I want to thank everyone that joined us live here on the show. Hey, Matt, while we have everyone here live and the people that are listening on the podcast or watching us here on YouTube, let them know where they can find you online and what they can continue to expect from you this offseason and heading into the next year for the Sacramento Kings season.
I appreciate that, Vince. Well, the Locked On Kings podcast, Locked On Podcast Network, we try and do daily or as close to daily as we can podcast content for you, more short form content. We do 5 days a week right now, or roughly around 5 days a week. We'll drop down to like 3 days a week when we get into the real dog days of the offseason, like after Summer League and things like that. But then back up to five, sometimes even more during the regular season itself. But here's what I always say every time I talk about my podcast on another podcast. There's so much good talent, so much good podcasts, so much good content out there for Sacramento Kings fans right now. I encourage you to try and listen to as many podcasts as you possibly can. And if you are a fan of the Kings Court podcast and you don't have time to add Locked On Kings into your repertoire or into your listening habits, do not drop Kings Court for Locked On Kings. Do not drop one podcast for another. You should be adding to, not switching out. So I really appreciate you, Vincent, allowing me to share some of that here and just to talk with you on the podcast today. I look forward to doing it again with you, and I appreciate the work that you do, and thank you for being a content creator in Sacramento.
Oh, yeah, man. Shout out to you, man, for coming on. Like I said, go follow him, guys. Locked On Kings, ABC10's Matt George. On Twitter, Matt George Sack. You guys go give him a follow. I've been your host today. My name is Vince Miracle. You guys can follow me on all social media platforms of @VMCenter. Shout out to our sponsor, Rate Crushers. If you guys are looking for insurance for your car, motorcycle, boat, leisure insurance, renter's insurance, guys, they got you covered over there at ratecrushers.com, and let them know that the Kings Court sent you. Shout out to everyone in the live chat who joined us live today. And until next time, Sacramento Kings fans, peace. All right, man, we're clear. That's it.
Thank you, boss.
Thank you, man. That was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And anytime you need me, just let me know. If I can swing it, I'll